Hey Chris, what's going on?
Saturday, 7:32. Time to talk education, or more life. Who knows? Our on ramp sort of took a little of the pins and needles out of the life combo. But I'm more than happy to start with battle fatigue.
you're right about the on ramp. The on ramp was short, and it was steep. I think we hit it hard, and then I think you were about to say, okay, let's hit broadcast. I'm not sure. And then I went ahead and interrupted you and said, let's do it. Let's get on.
Yep. Yeah.
Is that okay? Happened?
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. I think, you know, I think we're hitting a little bit of stride here, a synchronicity where one of us has to call it, because there's also that familiarity. We could just sit and chat and then kind of look, oh crap, we didn't hit the record button. And, you know, this has happened. It's definitely happened to me with, in grabbing podcasts or capturing any kind of audio reflective conversations, that the rapport end of it, sometimes the good stuff is there, but you don't want to blindside and just start record from the beginning. I've also learned that, you know, it's good to say, okay, we're hitting record now. But it's funny how often in those conversations we end up saying something like, yeah, I love what we were talking about just before we hit record.
Yeah, I get that. But at the same time, I think for me, the on-ramp's important. Like, it's important just to get out some things that might be just like on the tip of your tongue that you don't necessarily want to throw out on air.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I mean, and it brings to mind a really, I don't know, if anyone, you know, I'll say maybe someone's listening to this podcast. Let's assume people are listening to this podcast. And part of it that we touched on this, I think, last week, is that switch we've made into, it's still edutalk and we still chat about school. It's still loaded with, like, we wouldn't, if someone were listening and we're looking for specific, like, I don't know, pedagogical gold, I guess there's bits and pieces of that. So we have all the key terms and the key IDs that are in there. But it's fascinating how there's like that, I don't know, like it's a total bait and switch in the conversation. Like if someone were listening to our podcast and expecting it to be linear in any fashion, they may almost think that the exact sorry, I laughed. Those of you that are just listening and not watching, there was a vote that just happened and it was a slight thumbs down that, you know, the linear nature of the podcast. And it's funny though, because that is in my other world of podcasting, and maybe, you know, was a little bit a part of your world too, that there was a sense of pursuing a conversation. There's that element of letting the conversation evolve and kind of pop, and to be able to sort of chase down some of those spaces that maybe you had three or four questions that fascinated you about your guest. But now this, I think what you and I have sort of moved it into a different zone. And I think in some ways it models the everyday conversations that happen about education and life. And those are the ones that happens so readily all the time. You sit down in the staff room, you're in the halls. It isn't always as straightforward as I would really like to hear about the ed tech tool that you're currently using. So what I've said it before, what I've really come to appreciate in this is, well, one, I've embraced your POV on the on-ramp, because I think when we first started out, we go back a few episodes, I was like, come on, man, Neil, let's just make this fresh. Let's go right to record and see what happens. And it's a little bit like the, you know, shocking the system a bit. And I think what you end up, if you end up not spending some time arriving in the conversation, and this is where we get maybe into something that's more teachery, arriving in the conversation and make sure that everybody that's there has arrived, then you're going to end up using that time when you're in the conversation anyways. Like it has to be there. Yeah, so it's funny. I've come to embrace that. And someone listening to this may actually, you know, every time we kind of mention, or we're kind of laughing, or we kind of footnote back to something that happened just before tape, I sometimes wonder if, you know, anyone that's listening, God, like I wish we could have heard that too. Because we don't really have outtakes. This is it. This is everything apart from whatever we're on fire for before we hit record, right? A little bit of sparring on the front end and like, okay, let's hit record. And I appreciate, you know, especially when you say, okay, let's go to tape, because it's almost like that cue. It's like, okay, I'm good, you're good, let's go for it. Is school like that? It's hard to make that jump.
Yeah, it is. And it, you know, like you said, you have a plan, right? You have a lesson plan or like a general outline of what you want to happen, where you want to lead the students, right? But things, those teachable moments creep in, or yeah, they're teachable moments. So you might be doing something and then it will remind you of something that's happened in your life or in your day. And then you make that connection, but you model that for the students in elementary. So you'll say, I'll be in the middle of working with them and I'll think of a really good thing that's happened in my life that I can share with them. And as I'm doing that, I'm telling them, I'm sharing my connection with you. This is why making connections are important. And then you kind of like, you take that sidestep, you do that mini lesson, then you step back into the original path that you were on. So it happens all the time. And maybe people aren't aware of it. And maybe there are some really super focused people that just like laser in and go. But I find in elementary, it's a marathon, right? You're running the same race for 10 months and with the same people. So to me, it's important that you don't just have a laser focus, because if you're just laser focused, you're going to miss so much that's happening around you. So many moments that are important to share with the students and to make them aware of. So I guess as I'm doing my work every day with them, you know, I'm aware of what's happening around us and how can I build it in so that they get more of a robust education, like an idea of how this stuff works when you're an adult. Because I don't want them to just wait until they're an adult to start doing some of these things. I want them to start doing it now. And so like the podcasting conversation, the linear doesn't work for me. Like, I mean, it's important to, like I said, you have a plan, right? Like my long range plans, they're printed off, they're linear, but I mean, I've built them so that I can jump back and forth depending on, it's like a term plan. It's here's my final destination this term, but I can't tell you the route that I'm going to take because I might start running this way and then I get sick and tired of what I'm seeing along my path. And then I decide to take a scenic route, which leads me down another way. But at the end of the day, I'm going to get to the same place I'm supposed to be at the end. So, they both linear, and I guess what's the opposite of linear? I'm gonna say the word dynamic, but that's not what it is. But just being aware of both and being open to both, I think it's important. It's an art. And I wanted to say that when you were talking about your podcast and that you've got questions for your guests, there are things you want to know. But my favorite parts of my podcast were when we'd be going down this road and they would say something or tell me something about themselves or about what they're up to at the moment. And I would start writing new questions down. So at the end of my podcast, I would have a ton of questions on my paper. Most of them were unanswered, or else I'd be talking for 4 or 5 hours, which looking back now, I think I should have taken the opportunity every now and again to just let it go. Right? Like typically I would shoot for an hour, 45 to 60 minutes or a little bit over. But now that I look back, I think here and there I could have pulled a Joe Rogan and I could have gone for 2 hours talking to somebody who had something to say and who, like, I genuinely wanted to know these things about them. So I wouldn't say that's a regret now, but I think I should have done that. I should have broken the mold a little bit. But yeah, those were the best conversations. The ones where I stuck to my questions and didn't go anywhere, those for me were the most boring conversations I had. And looking back, I can see that now. When I was actually doing it, I didn't feel that way. But now that I look back, and actually, you you would hear about some of my interviews. So I remember connecting with you and saying, I spoke to this person and I really didn't get a good vibe. So what do I do? Do I publish the podcast? Do I leave it alone? What do I do? And I remember you dropped some nuggets of wisdom at the time around that whole thing. But that happened to me, which is pretty cool because I want to say 54 episodes, maybe it's 48, but I did around 50 episodes. And it's so cool because now that I look back, I remember my favorite interviews or conversations, because I didn't, like you, I didn't want to be an interview. I wanted to be a conversation. And that's why when people would ask me for my questions, I would give them my standard questions. And then I would say, depending on how this conversation goes, it might go in a totally different direction. And so anyway, the people that were really open to that, those were great conversations. Those, in my opinion, were my favorite podcasts. The ones where people seemed a little bit hostile, and I don't mean that in an aggressive way. I just mean like they just didn't seem into it. And I think maybe they were doing me a favor, or they had said yes, they would do the podcast. And when it came time, they just weren't feeling it, or maybe something was happening in their life at the time that was sucking up their energy. I don't know. I just know that I can remember from all those episodes, the good, bad, and the ugly, and the ones that I could have gone 2 hours, 2.5 hours. I'll give you an example. One of my conversations was with an educator named Catherine Flippin. I met Kat in California when I was at the Google Teacher Academy, and she was amazing. Like the way that she was doing her thing. She was one of our lead learners. So she wasn't a colleague who's sitting beside me soaking it up. She was one of the people delivering the content and the ideas and the concepts. And Kat, you know, as she was living her life, she ended up having to deal with cancer. And then she got through it, and now she's on the other end. And my intention was not to spend a lot of time talking with her about cancer, but talking to her and asking her some of the questions that I started with, it led us down more of a road. Like it was stepping away from EDU and more into just like life and living life and being resilient. And, you know, maybe having faith or not having faith and family and how all that stuff worked together. And that's an episode that I think I literally could have talked to her for 2.5 hours because there was so much there. And she had my attention, right? Like I was interested in her story, like as a human, her narrative, what she's gone through, how she's come out of it, what she's doing now, how she deals with it. And it's one of those podcasts, those episodes that just sits with me. And I love it because that's one of my experiences from that time of doing the work that I was doing back then. And so I appreciate you kind of letting me bring it back up because, you know, here we go again, right? Like we started on one path. Now I'm talking about when I used to podcast and how it played out and how it worked. You just never know. And most of the time my podcasts were around education. You know, that was the filter. But when it stepped out of education, I was more than happy. And I tried, and I think you know, I tried several times to speak with people on the podcast who were not educators. And I was able to get a few, but mostly, you know, I just stuck with education. Those were the people that really wanted to talk. And I don't know where it would be today if it was still going, but I know that when I was doing it, I really enjoyed it. And when it was time to stop, it was time to stop.
It's an interesting moment. You make me think about that interesting moment in a conversation that when it turns, and it can be for positive and negative, I think we're probably more aware when it turns to the negative. Maybe the emotions that come up around that or the state of mind, confusion around that is just imminent. It's right there. It's harder to sort of wrap your head around. And the good moments in the conversation, I mean, if you want to call them teachable moments or just the waiting time or productive struggle, whether it's in a conversation like this between you and I, or, you know, each with our private podcasts, or even in the classroom, I kind of wrestled this week with that, as in waiting time and noticing those moments. And it's a funny thing that often when we talk about teachable moments, one of the things that doesn't always follow the deconstruction of a teachable moment is the magic that's in that moment. And it's almost, to address it directly makes it less powerful than it is in some ways. It's like, I think I've had those conversations before where you sort of find out something that the kids think is really cool. Somehow it comes across your desk, and then you roll it into a lesson plan thinking that it's going to be awesome because the kids really think it's cool. And now what you've just done is you've co-opted the cool thing and made it about school, and the kids no longer want to. They're like, I don't want to do that in class. That's my thing that I do. And I think some of those moments that we notice either in conversation with our kids, our own children, our spouse, in our podcasts, it's really difficult. It's really difficult to pause in those moments. And it, you know, when you mentioned the whole, like, just letting going Joe Rogan on the convo and letting it flow. I mean, there's still no guarantee. Okay, so here's a couple observations on that. There's a lot of times in the podcast that I put together, I think, well, here's something that happens. Or, you know, I kind of check the clock and I'm like, yeah, man, we're creeping up on the hour. First off, bad move. Because as soon as you do that, you totally lose the magic. Anything that could be building towards that cool moment, you're rebuilding again. So a little bit like what we were talking, you either do rapport on the front end to get the ball rolling and then kind of support it along the way. Or if you're building it along the way, you know, it takes more work, but it can happen. I think the second thing is when you stop building towards the possibility of that teachable moment or that aha or something that's magical, it's when it's, you start to fall on kind of like that list of questions that you think you should be asking. And like you said, I learned that lesson early in my process, or my practice, I guess, of podcasting. You know, I walked formally away from my list of questions after episode 2. It's still there and I've added to it. But now what I've done is I've added questions to it that have popped up in the podcast. The ones that just kind of excited an idea, you know, or created a really good pause in the podcast that you don't edit out, because that's a powerful pause when you hit that kind of like, neither one of you know exactly what to say. And I've looked at the wavelengths before in the editing and listened to it again and again and again. And you're listening for, it's amazing how different that soundbite sounds, even in the absence of words, when the sync is off, like nobody really knows who's supposed to talk next, versus the great question or that moment that's there, because there's a different kind of electricity to it. And definitely when you're in the room, like you and I right now, if there's, I mean, I'm assuming that much of what we talk about is posted end to end. Do you do much editing on it, or you just drop it? So, and this was part of our plan, let it go in the way that, you know, capture it live and release it. That's it. No harm, no bruise, no nothing. And I think about those moments in the classroom. I think about those moments with our colleagues. I think about those moments with my own children where I just work way too hard to stick to the list of questions. And that's, I think, one of the biggest gifts that I've given myself. It's also a really problematic gift because I still don't know what to do with it, but it's one of the biggest gifts that I've given myself as far as working with my colleagues, working with my students, and definitely connecting with my own family, is appreciating that moment of wait time and letting it flow when possible, letting it flow.
Yeah. So, okay. I don't know how many times I've said this on the podcast, but for me, it's all about time, right? So if I have a bit of time, I want to do this. And if I'm going to do this, I'm going to need more time to, like, you know, publish it to the blog and then send it out to iTunes or whatever. And so unless you or I do something really crazy and we say something that's really off limits, out of bounds, there's no editing. This is it. This is what you're getting, right? So, but because, and the only reason for that is because it works for me. So if I'm the one dealing with the back end, then that's what's happening right now. And traditionally, that's what's been going on. I know a couple of times I've stepped in to do the back end work and publish this podcast. And I've noticed that you've been in YouTube and you've gone ahead and given the podcast a title or whatever. And I'm like, right on. I can turn this off now and I can just run. And when I'm pointing to my head and I'm saying I turn my brain off, because I can then just go ahead and do my thing with what Chris has already done with it automatically. Like, you've just saved me five steps or whatever. So I just take what you've done, throw it in the blog, publish it. I think, and we've talked about this, you just got to do what works for you. And you and I both have, we have enough experience with what I'm calling amateur podcasting to play around with it. We know, you know, the fastest way to push something out. So I'll give you an example. This morning, I got up and I did my regular stuff, you know, and then I got to the computer a little early and I was two episodes behind. So this is episode 23 today. I hadn't published 21 and 22, but in the short time I had, I was able to grab 21 and push it out. So it's probably on iTunes right now and it's definitely been posted on the blog. 22 is all but done. I just have to throw the audio into the cloud and then it's good to go. So I'm like this close to catching up and I've not had enough time, which sounds kind of weird, but I haven't had the time in the past 2 weeks to get up to this machine that I'm on right now and just dedicate, you know, 20 to 35 minutes to do it. It's just not happened. There's not been an opportunity where I felt like, okay, I'm going to give that time that I have right now to the podcast. Didn't happen. There are other things. So I just, for you and I right now, it's that smooth back and forth, right? We've got this thing going on. One of it is like one thing you call it is friendship. We have a friendship. We understand each other in this medium to do this type of thing, and it works for us. So it always comes back to that for me. It comes back to time, where you're willing to spend it, because we all have it, and then understanding what you're doing. And you and I have enough understanding to make it work in small time situations. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We've touched on the when you gather enough, when you feel like you've gathered. Okay, so I'll do it a different route. It's easier for you and I to do what we're doing right now because of the grind that we've gone through in our own podcasts. Like this method that you and I are using, I won't lie, it's very much informed by, but also a reaction to the intensity that it kind of takes to do all the editing, everything, the end to end, the checking and the rechecking, like all that kind of stuff. I like the I like that automation in this case helps us have a better conversation naturally. As you said, you post it, it gets sent to iTunes, it sort of gets out to all those social spaces so that others, if they choose to, they can listen to the conversation. You know, the thing about the my other podcast is that takes so much like steps along the way. Like there's very little automation to it. And part of it is probably because there's only me, as it was for you. There was only you. There's sort of like, you're just hyper aware of every single little step that you take along the way. Whereas this, it does feel like we're co-producing. I'll admit it. I'm lazy guy. I mean, in the scale of the post, you are doing more, like you're carrying more of the ball there. And I'm deeply appreciative of that. Within that, I also realized that we're also making choices. I think you're making choices too, to keep even that side simpler, just to get the conversation out. That's the first thing that you made me think about. The other part too, is that we've also been very clear with each other that the time that we, not only the time that you and I spend together is intentional. We it's funny. It almost feels like it's, despite the fact we softly said, oh yeah, hey, let's try and do this every week. That'll be an interesting body of work to look back on, like a full school year. That's about as tight as our plan is. You know, let's see if we can get in. I don't even know what number of weeks that is, but 23 in some ways, I think a far better way to almost, like, instead of episode 23, is to almost like saying this is week 23 of our process. And that completely changes the context and the pursuit. So what we've traded off on one side, maybe hyper simplifying the production value, we've committed to a serial version of a podcast. And we're now in week 23, which is almost entirely in line with the number of weeks that we've had in the school year so far. I think maybe we've had one or two. So right now in the school year, we're somewhere around, you know, week 24 or week 25 in school time, right? Not with holidays and time away. So I think in some ways we've come to this space because what we're willing to embrace, with the complexity that we're willing to embrace, is something entirely different. It's no longer on that side of kind of futzing with so much of the technical elements. It's more spending considered time with each other and also pursuing a longer conversation. I don't know. I don't think I've had 23 weeks of continuous conversation with anyone at any time in all of my school experience. And I will say that as far as professional learning and personal growth, I don't know if I have not had a moment like this so far. And this includes me getting to know you, getting to know your context, me feeling like I've been heard with some of my thoughts. So this is something, even in the podcast world, I don't know if I've come across this either, especially considering we haven't brought a guest on yet. Like, it's just you and I recounting our week, which is kind of part two to our frame. Let's do this for a school year and let's just share our contexts. So I love the side bars that we get to, but I almost think like that's part of the heart of what this podcast is. We can be topical. We can review the week specifically from an external perspective. What impacted? What was out there? What's the latest tech tool? We've talked about that sometimes, but I think there's a whole lot of content out there that covers that ground. I'm not sure if there's much out there that I think celebrates the relationship between panels and between educators in the way that we've done. So totally appreciative of that and the opportunity to continue with it. And let's see where it goes. Maybe we'll do a second season. Maybe not. We'll see at the end of the school year.
Yeah, I guess so. There's and I like, basically we're halfway through the school year. I know I am. I mean, we sent home our report cards the other day. So we're starting fresh in terms of evaluating and reporting to parents in the elementary panel here where I'm at. So I agree with everything you said. I think it's kind of cool. And then it reminds me to shift gears a little bit. So for the last half of our podcast, maybe we should purposely hit up something that happened this week or you know, what our kids are kind of in the middle of doing right now as a way to mark this halfway point, I guess. I don't know. I'm more than happy to tell you that my kids have hit a point where they're seeing fluency happen using technology. And so my example is this week, my students are working with Scratch coding, and what they're doing is they're writing a story that has to have at least two characters, and there has to be a back and forth dialogue, but there also has to be a problem and a solution to their story. And this is happening because they had used Scratch earlier on a few weeks, 2 weeks ago maybe, where they were using Scratch to demonstrate their understanding in mathematics. And they weren't that familiar with Scratch. So I had a lot of students who were frustrated. A lot of students who were, you know, weren't as interested as they could be. And I remember telling them, listen, the coding part is the experimental part. You know, I'm not going after that. It's an opportunity for you to dive into this and to see if you really like it. Now we did Hour of Code in December. So coding is not like new to them. And in this day and age, they hear about it all the time. And almost all of them have some kind of experience with coding or understanding that there are apps out there and websites out there that they've been on that allow them to think in that way, right? To be able to process their thoughts and be able to make something happen based on logic. So anyway, they started really bothered, and now it's amazing. Like they are so far more advanced than I am that they come to me out of habit to say, hey, listen, I want you to take a look at this and I want you to see if you can help me with this particular problem. And I tell them, I'm more than happy to look at it, but I'm not as fluent as you are and the other kids in this room are, because I'm not sitting here coding. You're kind of thinking about the coding, thinking about the writing component of your assignment right now. My job is to facilitate that and to provide you with feedback to help you with the writing component, because that's kind of the area, the content area that we're working in. But the coding, that's like you've got, you know, 23 other experts around you. That's who you need to see. And then I need to listen to those conversations and I need to observe what's happening, because there's a lot of the learning skills I can see there. I can see a lot of leadership. I can see a lot of growth mindset. Like there's so much that I get to observe by watching my students work together to solve problems or to encourage each other. And so it's kind of neat that I can say to you in February that my kids are writing using coding, and they, you know, using the technology to get onto the internet is a joke. Like they all do it all the time. They're fluent in that regard. And now some of them are really running away with the coding. They're really enjoying it. And so I encourage them to continue to do things like that. Because I think it's important for them to know a little bit of it, but it's more important for them to engage in something that they find interesting, because some of my kids aren't really interested in the writing process. They're more interested in the coding aspect of it, but I get to benefit, right? Because they're creating amazing stories with my help and the help of other students. And then I get to evaluate them on that as they near the end and they've got some kind of product for me to talk to them about and evaluate. And some kids really like the writing process and don't like the coding process. But again, you know, I get to benefit because I'm the one that's going to get to evaluate their work, and they're getting there. And so it's really cool to see that, to step back and to talk to you about that. That's just one example of my students moving in the right direction. They're using the tech because it's engaging, it's fun. It's so awesome how they can share their work with me and I don't have to get up and go see them, and they don't have to get up and come see me, right? Like we have a place where we park our Scratch stories. And as I'm sitting at my table where my device is, students are saying across the room, hey, Mr. C, I'm ready for you to take a look. It's not finished, but I want you to look at it. So I'm sitting at my computer and I'm watching their Scratch story, right? And it's amazing because it just, I don't even know how to explain it. It's just so cool that they're not walking up to me. Some do. Some come up to me with their computer and like, take a look at this. But a lot of them are starting to say, hey, I'm over here doing this, and so I need you to do that over there. And so basically we're killing two birds with one stone, which is really cool and efficient. And we're just, the time is being used effectively right now doing this writing work. So I just thought I would make that connection. I don't know what to think of coding yet. I don't think it's the be all and end all. I feel that there are others that feel that way. I think I'm more balanced right now with it. I see that it's one other tool students can use to learn more or to demonstrate their learning. But it's for me, it's just not the be all and end all, right? Like do you get what I mean by that? There are some people that are just all over it and it's happening a lot with their students and in their classrooms. And for me, that's not the case. I guess if you had to look at what I indulge in as a teacher with my students, I love to get devices into their hands. But that's my weakness, right? Like the paper and pencil, it's not a balance 50-50. And now that I'm saying that, I'm thinking, should I balance it 50-50? Do I need to? Do I need to talk to my kids about that and see where they're at with that? So even talking about what they're doing and how they're doing it has me reflecting on the balance. And I know I'm not balanced. So do I need to achieve balance? Do I need to bring it closer to 50-50? I don't know. I'll have to consider it and talk to my students.
Yeah, it's I've tried in small pieces to introduce coding. And I get part of it is, an unfamiliarity. Some of the terminology, I like the words are kind of important to me. I mean, I find it, following any feed about including coding in the classroom, and inevitably you're going to come across some conversation that puts coding and computational thinking and sometimes even mathematics into the same string. And, you know, I think in some ways my thoughts about pursuing coding might be similar to someone listening to this podcast thinking about podcasting, as in, I think there's probably a real complex way to go about introducing coding that my brain is hooked on, like it has to be really complex. And I think that's just my lack of knowledge around it. I've played with Scratch. My students have played with Scratch. I haven't worked nearly hard enough to include it as an extended activity at all. And, you know, that's just time and place, and I haven't got there. Where I get philosophical on it is trying to understand, I guess, this past week, I had a conversation with a student around talking about their previous successes in a particular, in their English course. And I was asking the student if they knew, or if they could explain their success so far. Could they kind of break it down how they arrived at the mark that they arrived at? And they couldn't. So the mark that's on their credit counseling summary is like a gift to them. It was something that it was given. They didn't have a sense of what they did to earn it. And I think that, so that's, I had other conversations coming out of that, but it comes to mind because I think that coding gives you an answer. It's that answer to that I was looking for from the student. I wanted to know what was the source code to them succeeding in their English credit. And they didn't know what it was. And it strikes me that there's a whole lot inside of that where, you know, was it that the course was easy? Was it that they were highly skilled? Was it that, you know, there's so many things that they had some good assignments sometimes, some bad assignments other times. Like there's so many little pieces, but they couldn't express any of that. And it wasn't just a one-off. I came back to it a couple times. So the student had a couple different opportunities to articulate and reflect on what brought them success. And I think coding represents a little bit of the behind the curtain to, I want to say a necessary skill, but I don't know if that's exactly it. But it strikes me that it reveals the nature, and it reveals a skill set that just getting closer to that understanding of what is happening inside or behind our digital devices, I do believe is an important literacy. Fluency literacy, I think it's an important thing to get to. In the same way, I do think that's important in writing, that we understand the difference between a subject and a predicate, or a noun and a verb. Whether we spend a lot of time slicing that up in our sentences, I think it's good to be able to map that out. So to look at a paragraph and to understand those connections. So that's kind of where coding is for me. I haven't worked nearly enough to include it in my dailies, but I do believe that it's, I think it's a necessary fluid.